Lake Charles.
Hello and welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we're joined by Dr. Liz Skilton, who has written a very, very interesting book about hurricane naming and American culture. She calls it Tempest. Dr. Skilton is a professor in the Department of History at UL Lafayette and has been with us for 5 years approximately. And she's been on our show before and is a frequent contributor. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Pearson.
So I'm excited about this new book. It's beautiful, and it's certainly very interesting. You've been thinking about hurricanes for a while. How did you get interested in hurricanes, and what led you to this idea of hurricane naming?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on the show to talk about this new book. I'm really excited about it. As you said, it took a really long time, about 12 years from start to finish, in kind of tracing this history of hurricane naming. The idea came to me after I had moved to New Orleans to start my graduate degree at Tulane University and was working at the Louisiana State Museum on their forthcoming, and now it's out, the Living with Hurricanes exhibit, which is on display in the French Quarter, so you can go and actually see it. And my job was really minimal. I was a graduate assistant, and I was just supposed to pull papers on a famous New Orleans hurricane, Hurricane Betsy, which was, as many of your listeners probably know, in 1965. And Betsy had an extreme effect on New Orleans. The area flooded in ways that were very similar in 2005 when Hurricane Katrina occurred. And so my job was to pull these newspaper articles so that they could compare Betsy and the history of hurricanes in New Orleans to Katrina and what had happened as part of this exhibit. And as I sat at the microphone reader and was looking through these old newspaper articles, I kept noticing how many times we talked about the hurricane, in this case Betsy, but later other hurricanes like Andrew in 92 or Katrina in 2005 as gendered objects. So we described Betsy as no lady. We talked about her doing certain things, destroying, sweeping the coastline, having a certain fury, for instance. And then when we got to things like Andrew in 92, we talked about him as, you know, a really destructive male force who's storming the coastline and throwing bombs at it. Meanwhile, Katrina, we had certain expletives we used and maybe that we painted or spray painted on buildings outside. And I'm sure some of your listeners can think of a couple of those expletives in their head right now. And so this discussion or discourse we have about hurricanes is what drew me to this subject. Because, you know, where I grew up in this Tornado Alley Valley, we didn't name our tornadoes, and yet we named hurricanes. And these names seem to have an effect in our discussion of these storms and how we thought about them, or at least how we talked about them in newspapers, in media, and then just generally through those spray painted houses, for instance. And so I started digging into this question of why do we name hurricanes? So when did this practice start? Why did it start? How has it changed over time? And then what effect does this naming system have on our impression of these storms, our memory of these storms, and then potentially on how we react in the moment, so how we respond or prepare for these storms. And what I found was a really fascinating history, which is what I tell throughout the book.
Yeah, amazing. Great introduction, by the way. Let me read a little bit from your book. This is a spot that I found in your book. You're talking about the Windy Sisters of 1955. So it says here, but residents were enamored with the capricious girl who had a dangerous flirtation with the coastline. Unfortunately, as Connie, which is the name of one of the storms, swished her windy tail and swirled her skirts, she also delivered a quote-unquote kiss that packed a punch. And this was all in the New York Times. So you really see from that flirtation, capricious, kiss, punch, that the terms we're using to describe these hurricanes are gendered, as you say, which means that they have characteristics that we would normally ascribe to women particularly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that pattern continues from the 1950s when this naming system is introduced in the U.S. Through today. So you can still find newspaper articles, blogs, social media posts that use gender to describe storms. So it's not a practice that has died down at any point in time. It's just changed a little bit over time.
We haven't got over. I suppose it can't die down as long as American culture or patriarchal culture exists. Tempest brings out so many connections, and I just want to sketch some of those out between hurricanes and cultural themes, including, and you bring this up in your book quite fascinatingly, Cold War politics, disaster fiction, feminism, the rise of feminism in the United States, ideas of technology and manipulation of nature and what is nature, and images of male and female. So, sort out that a little bit. Were you kind of surprised by all the cultural, you know, metaphors and images and themes and motifs that were dredged up by hurricanes?
Yeah, absolutely. To construct the book, I did a survey of newspaper articles from across the country.
Over 8,000, right?
Yeah. So the actual database from start to finish includes approximately 9,000 newspaper articles from over 50 years of hurricane history. And these include hurricanes that hit the Gulf Coast, that hit the Atlantic seaboard, and even the Pacific coast of the United States. So I'm looking at cities across the country and tracking how they have described hurricanes over time. So in some ways, the book tracks all of your favorite hurricanes, and then it describes how they were described at that moment. And what was fascinating to me was that at each different moment in time, you could take a look at one hurricane and be able to tell what was going on in broader U.S. culture because the descriptors of that hurricane would reflect what was happening. So, for instance, in the 1970s, hurricanes were described as similar to the feminist movement. They were stormy women. They were part of a women's lib storm. They were radical. They were sweeping with changes. And this obviously draws attention from feminists who are fighting for other causes. And thus, the hurricane naming system becomes a focus of feminist concern, and that in turn causes these names and these descriptors to continue to reflect feminist stereotypes. So it just all blends together at different moments. And that happens throughout the course of hurricane naming history.
One of the characters that you, it's not a character, a person you bring up is Roxy Bolton, you know, who I didn't know anything about prior to reading this book, but had a really storied connection with the now National Organization of Women, but also was a proponent of ungendering hurricane names. And in some sense, hurricane naming is tied up with the origin of now, which is kind of an unspoken history that you kind of traced out. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I stumbled on this story of Roxy Bolton and looking at the history of hurricane naming. I knew that up until the 1970s, hurricane names from the post-war period through the 70s were named exclusively after women. So we only saw Betsy or Camille, for instance. There were no Andrews. And then past the 1970s, they changed to become the equal-gendered naming system that we use now, which includes both male and female names. And obviously something happened in the 70s to cause that to change, and what happened was Roxy Bolton. Roxy Bolton was a feminist. She was part of the National Organization for Women, and she took up the cause of hurricane naming because she was from Florida and got really sick of hearing Camille described as no lady. And thus, she said that these names and the gender descriptors used were causing negative descriptors to be associated with women. And thus, if we wanted to remove negative descriptors from associations with women, we needed to look no further than the hurricane naming process to do this.
You know, I could point out, it's ironic that Roxy herself was described by some of these very same negative, You know, so Roxy Storms at the Capitol, or, you know, the sweeping Roxy, you know, there's a sense that she got gendered somehow in the inner activism as well, right?
Absolutely. One of my favorite lines used in a newspaper describing Roxy Bolton's efforts to change this naming process was that weathermen had better batten their hatches because she was coming, which was very similar to what was reported when we look at Hurricane Agnes descriptors in 1972. So the same sort of descriptions are applied to Roxy Bolton. Roxy Bolton's fight to change hurricane naming ultimately did result in the change of hurricane naming, but not during her time fighting for it. It came a little bit after. But she fought this system for approximately a decade. So it took 10 years to actually change the names the first time.
And your book points to the importance of having women in positions of power, because I think it's Krupps who became Interior Secretary or Commerce Secretary and then really gave the, okay, let's change this. And then it changed, and then people accepted it. So up to that point, it was fight, 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 but all the men were saying, nah, it's all right, it's fine the way it is. And then all of a sudden, when the seats at the table changed, you saw actual political change.
Yeah, absolutely. Secretary Juanita Krupps is the reason why the names ultimately did change, and it's because she was in control of the National Weather Bureau at that point in time. And so she put the order down the chain, but it's because of the efforts of Roxy Bolton that was even on her to-do list, you could say.
Let's talk a little bit about George Stewart, who is the author of Storm. Didn't know anything about George Stewart. I'm not really that generation. But certainly my parents would have known a lot about him. It was so big. Tell us a little bit about George Stewart and his book Storm.
Yeah, in 1941, George R. Stewart, who was an author of fiction and an English literature professor at University of California, Berkeley, wrote this big book that he'd been working on for several years before, just called Storm. And the book itself is approximately 12 chapters long, so it's a fairly short book, and it's a really engaging read. I highly recommend it. So if you're looking for a good fiction book that talks about hurricanes, this is it. So Stewart takes a storm and tracks it over its lifespan. So each chapter is a different day in the storm's development. So we see it appear on the radar screen, and then we see it dissipate by the end of the book. And at the center, the middle, or the climax of the book, he reveals that this storm is given a name by the weatherman that is tracking it. And as a result, so the storm would be known as Mariah, so with an H at the end, not like Maria from the latest round of hurricanes in popular memory. And Mariah becomes this femme fatale figure in this book. She is the driving force behind all events in the book. She's the major action that the weathermen, the people that are experiencing it, are all focused on. And then she is also going to inspire others to think about hurricanes as gendered objects, particularly feminine objects, in that the U.S. Weather Bureau during World War II, who is reading this book that becomes a bestseller by that point in time, ultimately decides to introduce a naming system in 1944 that mimics George R. Stewart's naming system that he introduced as part of this plot of the book Storm. So we can see how a moment in popular culture influences the progression of meteorology, it influences World War II, and then ultimately it's going to influence the introduction of a naming system in the 1950s officially in the United States.
Wow, that's an amazing story. It's pretty crazy. We are talking today to Dr. Liz Skilton of the UL History Department about her book, which just came out, Tempest, Hurricane Naming and American Culture. Stay with us. We'll talk some more.
KRVS listeners are proud of their communities, schools, businesses, and homes. They care about where they live and improving their lives. Are these listeners your customers? They should be. Sponsor programming on KRVS. Call 337-482-4444. 1437.
How often have you turned to music for comfort or to make you even happier? We're not always sure why, but music has a powerful effect on our emotions. Let the music reach you each week on The Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
We're back. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. This is Bayou de Beltway. We're talking with Dr. Liz Skilton of the UL History Department today about her book, Tempest, Hurricane Naming and American Culture. As we left, we were talking about George Stewart, the author of Storm, an amazing story, and it makes me want to get that book and read it. You talk about a number of specific hurricanes in the book, as you might imagine. They appear, dare I say it, like characters as they come through, Camille, Andrew, and then finally Katrina. Everyone in the Gulf South, I imagine, has a personal story with relation to one or more of those hurricanes. When you were researching this, were people like wanting to tell you about their story? Like they found out you're doing hurricanes and they go, oh, when Hurricane Katrina came or when Ike was here or something like that?
Yes, absolutely. I did a lot of oral history interviews with individuals about their experiences with hurricanes. And in talking with them about their experiences with various hurricanes, I came to realize just how much these storms become a part of our lives. At different moments in time, you know, we mark our lives by these storms. They influence where we go. They influence where we are educated. They influence the shape of our city, even who's around us, who's our neighbor at various moments. And as a result, we think very strongly about these hurricanes and their impact on our lives. And so anytime when we're looking at hurricane history, we're talking about a multitude of factors. So there's the personal, the experience, there's the local, there's the regional, the state, and the national experience. And I try to bring all of those together in the book as I'm talking about what these hurricanes are doing and how that's influencing us.
I was just thinking, you know, conveniently for me, I moved here in 2005, so it's really easy to keep track of that, right? Because I had no sooner moved here in 2005 when I had to evacuate because of Katrina, so it has a very, I'll never forget Katrina or starting at UL Lafayette because it was connected with evacuation, you know, for the hurricane. So I'm sure many people have those kind of stories. Their baby came just before or just after their some event in their life. Moving on, there were some themes that I noticed in the book, the development of technology for studying, measuring, attempting to control, albeit not so successfully, the hurricanes as they're proceeding. And then I also noticed Congress responds, and there's almost a decade-by-decade different response in Congress to the threat of hurricanes. Resources are thrown at it. Bureaucracies are thrown up. Are we better off now than we were in 2018? Excuse me, than we were in 1918. So your book, you know, in 2019, are we better off now for all these bureaucracies and resources and everything?
I think if we look at the trajectory of disaster response, understanding about disaster and the individual perspective on what we do, how we respond, where we go, we are 100% better than we were. We are more knowledgeable about the impact of these storms than ever before. We have systems in place that are meant to deal with the mitigation, the preparation, and the response to these storms. And we know just how deadly they can be. I think the problem is that we know all of this, and panic still sets in. And I think disaster history shows us that when that panic hits, we need to remind ourselves of all of these things. And we need to continue to tweak our system when it's not working. And part of tweaking the system is constantly reevaluating what policies are in place, what practices we rely on, and what things have come about that have influenced how we respond now. So one thing I talk about in the book and the very conclusion is the impact of social media on our impression of storms and even on our disaster response. So we've seen social media do good and we've seen it do harm in the process of disaster response. But that means that we need to continue to go back to the drawing board and say, how is social media being used? How do we use it? And then what sort of things do we need to be aware of? And that relies on us constantly looking at the impact of it. So disaster history never ends. This process never ends. And I think it's important that we just continue to keep that in our minds.
You know, one of the things, there are a number of advents that really made a difference as I was reading your book. Satellites made a big difference, and they came pretty early because all of a sudden we could really see a storm coming, and we had good indication that something was happening. That was around 1960, I think, where we got those satellites. I was surprised it was so early. I guess it was in conjunction with the space program or something, or keeping up with the Russians. So it was tied up with national defense. And then gradually we moved into, weather coverage, emergency preparedness. Then we got the Weather Channel. All of a sudden we have people who are willing to talk about this stuff 24 hours a day, just about. The 24-hour news cycle, social media, as you pointed out, things are different now. We have a whole kind of team ready to go on disaster. But at the end of the day, as you point out, these are still humans. So, we get into routines and everything, and then like whether to evacuate or not evacuate. And we saw that recently,
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite analogy to use in disaster history is you have Google Maps, right, which will tell you which direction to go. And during an evacuation, you have to choose whether you're going to use that direction or whether you're going to go the direction that you want to go or that you think others are not going to be on. So, for instance, where we're at right now, if we take I-10 one direction, but we think everybody else is going to be on I-10, then maybe you might take another road, but it ends up clogging that other road. And so as disaster response teams try and plan things out, they have to consider what Google Maps is going to be saying and work with Google Maps to try and indicate these things. And that becomes an additional level of response that we wouldn't have had in the 1960s or 70s, and certainly not when we look at 1910s for your original part of the question. It's quite fascinating to look at how technology is influencing disaster today and to think about where it was in the past. We, like I said, understand things better than ever, but we are still flawed. We are still human, and humans are the number one factor in disaster that we have to plan for.
Good point. And how do you plan for humans? The biggest chapter in your book is focused on Katrina in terms of pages. Did Katrina change the way we think about and respond to hurricanes? Has Katrina made changes in everything? Is it like we can talk about hurricanes prior to Katrina and after Katrina? Or was it just another big storm?
I think for Louisianans, Katrina is that momentous marker for us, right? Everything is pre-Katrina or it's post-Katrina. On a national sense, in some ways, you could argue that storms that follow Katrina might have similar sorts of effects or make us rethink our strategies.
Like Sandy, for example.
Sandy is a good one. Mm-hmm. Harvey, most recently, or Maria, looking at Puerto Rico, even others that will come, right? We're always going to have new markers that move the bar, so to speak. What I think Katrina does, and what I talk about in the book, is set us into this new course in hurricane history, where we have have new factors at play where storms mean more than just a regional event. It's a national event. It's an international event where our expectations of response, of policy, of systems in place is so much more complex than it was in the past. And where we have these new factors such as social media, 24-hour news, individual response that are moving at faster and faster rates. So it's not like we have completely changed from where we were at the beginning of hurricane history. It's still the same problem. We have a hurricane. It's coming. How do you respond? It's that everything else has changed in this process of response.
Well, as we look into the future and we think about, we speculate out, we look at Harvey and we look at some of these other, the question about named and unnamed hurricanes or unnamed storms or so on. I'm just curious, where do we go from here? I mean, you've studied hurricanes maybe more than almost anybody in the United States. What's coming up?
I think the big question we're really wrestling with right now is what is the unintended consequence of naming? So if we attach names to hurricanes, what does that do to our perception of other types of hazards or disasters? A really good example of this here locally is the 2016 floods, for instance. I've done some research most recently in this area on the 2016 floods. And as we know in Louisiana, the 2016 floods did not have an official name. It wasn't considered a hurricane because it is not a hurricane. It's a rain event. Well, what does that mean in terms of our disaster policy? What does that mean in terms of how people responded to it? Did they take it seriously? Did they not? Of course, you take it seriously when it's actually happening in your backyard. But how do you tell others that it was this serious as opposed to a hurricane, which is given a certain designation or characterization, even a certain tax identity or status that is built upon systems of trying to distinguish hurricanes as something unique. And so the question of naming of hurricanes is much larger than just why do we give hurricanes names or what is so cool about these names and how we use them in terms of descriptions. It's more about what is this doing to everything in terms of our disaster response.
Let me ask a slightly different question. We have a couple minutes left. To what extent are rising sea levels, climate change, population growth, those kinds of issues going to be important for the future of these kind of disaster events?
Well, again, here in Southwest Louisiana, these are pressing concerns. You can't go to the coastline and tell me that it is the same as it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even 20 years ago, because it's not. And there are a multitude of factors that play a role in that. I think when we're looking at how we talk about what's happening in Southwest Louisiana or on the Louisiana coastline, we can easily see how names become a concern or the terminology that we use to describe what's happening becomes a concern. There's a lot of reaction when I say the term climate change as opposed to, say, global warming. These terms mean something. They have political meanings. They have cultural meanings. And as a result, they have implications in terms of how we respond and we think about what's going on here. Now, we're still looking at the coast. We're still seeing what's happening. It doesn't matter what we call it. It is happening. But it's important to realize what influence names have on our lives.
Wow. Well, as we think about oceans warming and we think about temperatures is becoming and more chaotic, weather becoming more chaotic, and then we think about some people have said, and we've got to close, but some people have said that Category 5 is not enough. We need to have a Category 6. Yes or no? Category 6?
I think that, again, we're getting into the details. Category 5 versus Category 6, it doesn't matter.
It's still a big, bad hurricane.
Yeah, it's how we respond.
Event. We've been talking today to Liz Skilton, who teaches history in the Department of History at UL Lafayette. She has a new book out called Tempest, Hurricane Naming in American Culture. Please check that out. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Harpistry, an eclectic mix of harp-centric world music, Mondays at noon and Sundays at midnight, right here on KRVS.
You are listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette Lake Charles, online at krvs.org.